Ethan. Recently, we've been talking about the freedom in Christ and not having to do things to gain God's approval or to gain God's acceptance. And that meant spending time with our families, having fun, and not being too concerned about how much studying we do or how much Bible reading we do, not to feel guilty about it if we don't get it done, just allow God to lead us to what he has for us. And so we were having fun with that. I wrote a couple articles, and then my religious background set in, and I thought of that verse, set your affections on things above and not on things of the earth. And,
not.
And I'm like, well, how's that all fit in? And so I was up visiting Clyde here a month or two ago, and I brought this up. We started doing some digging. And like many other verses, we found out it really isn't saying what we've been taught in our religious past that it's been saying.
Exactly. So, Clyde,
why don't you share some of the things you learned as you dug into this verse and into the background of this verse?
Sure. And I appreciate you bringing this verse to our attention. You and I have similar religious backgrounds, different denominations, but still backgrounds of bondage. And it's been so long ago since I left that there's some passages that I forgot how much bondage they created, you know, and this is a great example of that. And, you know, as we learn more about grace and especially in our dispensation, the secret administration, it's actually a dispensation of grace. And so everything about it is centered in grace. In fact, absolute grace. We have a book called The Absolute Despotism of Grace. And it's glorious. And what we're talking about here is ultimate freedom, because we have we've not just been forgiven, we've been justified. And beyond that, our history goes back beyond the reach of sin. So we predate sin. Sin's a nuisance, but it's not about who we are. And we're complete in Christ. And so everything's about love and grace and kindness and tenderness and so forth. And if we read verses, of course, it's understandable we read verses outside of Paul, and especially outside of the current administration, it's understandable that we would see verses that would be more binding, bringing us into bondage. But especially in Ephesians and Colossians, if we see anything there that looks like it has to do with bondage, there's something wrong, obviously, you know, because absolute grace can't stand in legalism. They don't match. And so we have to ask ourselves, what am I missing here? Because all of us who were brought up in religion, somewhere along the way, we first got introduced to any passage of scripture. And when we did, someone read it, probably a preacher or a pastor. Someone read it, they told us what it meant, and then it sticks. And it's near impossible to not read that verse from our first introduction to it and think that that's what it says. In fact, it really takes divine enlightenment, realization. And the realization starts with absolute grace, and that we can enjoy life, like your article on chillaxing. A lot of people have enjoyed that, and it's meant a lot to them. But much of Christianity is centered in this seeming need to abstain from anything that's pleasurable or enjoyable. And somehow, enjoyment and pleasure are not compatible with spirituality. And so spirituality looks, you know, somber, and we're not having any fun. When in fact, Paul's the one who told us that, that God gives us freely, richly, all things to enjoy. It's about enjoyment. In fact, he teaches that justification brings happiness. Happiness is the man, you know, to whom the Lord doesn't impute sin, but imputes righteousness. I mean, this is happiness and enjoyment of life and enjoyment of all the things that God has freely made and given to us. Then we come across, like you said, a verse like this. And I really appreciate that it bothered you and you zeroed in on it. And the verse that you quoted was from the King James. That's what I would have grown up listening to as well. And I'm going to read it again. If you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above. And maybe that'd be okay. Except there's another clause. Not. Don't set your affection on things on the earth. So off the religionists go. Off the slave owners go to bring us into bondage and tell us that all types of things that we might enjoy are evil and wrong. And it's not surprising that you know that Christianity does this, because Christianity has a history of something that we would call, that's called asceticism, which is in fact, I'll read you a definition. Interesting thing is the concordant version uses the word asceticism one verse before these two verses. Very interesting. And but the word asceticism, just looking in the dictionary, Oxford says asceticism is the practice of living a simple and strict way without physical pleasure, especially for religious reasons. And then Merriam-Webster says that it's the practice of strict self-denial as a measure of personal and especially spiritual discipline. Now, where we came up with this idea historically was in the first and second century. There was a movement that's known as Gnosticism or the Gnostics, and they had a lot of doctrines, but at the core of their belief was this idea that the material world or the physical world is evil, and that the spiritual world is good. So if you're going to be spiritual and you're going to focus on spirituality and spiritual things, you're going to have to do every effort possible to avoid the material or physical world, especially in the abstinence of pleasure and enjoyment. And again, Steve, you like me, maybe you even a little more, but probably most of our listeners, if they grew up in a church setting, knows that Christianity came after their anything that might be enjoyable and pleasurable. You got to cut that out of your life. And if you're going to be spiritual, you got to be dull and boring, and you've got to be detached from the world. In fact, I taught you got to be separated from the world. You know, and you see that all, you can see that whole thing of avoidance probably really clearly, like in the Amish, who would make every effort to avoid contact with the world and anything, any system, any activity that they have, and we're going to try to live somewhere in the past, you know, and even like the Christianity I grew up in, somewhere in the past is just a little in the past. So you can do certain things. You know, if they're 100 years old, you can do them. You know, just no real modern stuff. You know, so it's like that avoidance and that separation from the world. That was probably when I grew up, probably the most important thing I thought spirituality was separation from the world. Be ye separate, you know? And so I would listen to preachers because I loved God. I have the same love for God. I have a greater appreciation for him now because I know some real stuff about him, but I love God and I wanted to please him. And I thought it came through a list of don't do this, don't do that. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to please him more, my list needs to grow. And so every time I'd hear a preacher preach and he'd on the little sly say something, you know, negative about something, I'd put it on the list. Now, this wasn't a physical list, you know, but it was in my mind and I'd avoid that. You know, I'd hear a preacher preach against, and you have too, I'm sure. Those of us with deeply bondage of religion have heard everything preached against. You know, I've heard chewing gum preached against. I've heard reading the newspaper preached against. I mean, just name it, you know. And I thought my spiritual growth was marked in something else I didn't do and something else I abstained from, you know. And pretty soon, the only thing you're doing is what you absolutely have to do, you know, if it's go to school or go to work or whatever, absolutely necessary. And then everything's taken up with reading the Bible, going to church, witnessing, passing out tracts, and all of that stuff. And a verse like this would on the surface seem to support that we're to have affection on things above and not on things that are below. And then you have to think about that. Well, when it says that we're to have affection on things above, not on things on the earth, we have to think, well, what are these things on the earth that we can't have affection for? Is Paul talking about nature? Don't have any affection. Don't have any love for flowers or trees or the mountains or the beach or sunsets and sunrises. I mean, or the summer or the winter. That hardly makes sense. How's that going to make somebody spiritual or not spiritual? Or maybe it's a family. Maybe we're not supposed to be loving our spouses, or at least not too much, or our children, or our grandchildren, or our parents, or other relatives, and don't go to family reunions. Might spark up some affection. You know, I mean, these are logical things that our mind goes to. Things on the earth, natural things, family things. How about associates? You know, neighbors, people we work with, people we go to school with. You know, limited contact. Don't get too attached to those people. Don't love them. Just tolerate them and get on, you know, being loving the things that are spiritual, that are above, you know. Or maybe it's even work itself. You know, I think there's something happens in our mind and where we begin to have a disdain for work because it's secular work. And the only spiritual work is non-secular, you know, so it's funny, you know, it'd be easy to say if some parents had a son that grew up and he decided to preach, they'd say he went into the ministry. Like you can't minister if you have another occupation, you know, isn't it crazy? So it's all religious, you know? And so, but Paul's the one who told us, you know, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. In fact, even employment and the worst kind of employment, the most drastic form of working would be slave and master and slave. And Paul says, don't do it with eye service. Don't do it just like when the master's looking, you do really good. No, do it from your heart as unto the Lord. So the whole idea is everything we do in life, we look beyond the immediate circumstance and know God's behind it. Paul had a great example of this when he's in prison. Paul could say, I'm a prisoner of Rome, you know, or I'm a prisoner, and he could name the warden, right? But instead, who does he say he's a prisoner of? Jesus Christ. Wow. How is that? He looked beyond the immediate circumstance, and he looked to the ultimate cause, the cause of all things. And if we do that, everything becomes worship. Everything becomes spiritual. This whole idea that the material world and the physical world are evil and must be avoided, and the spiritual world is good and holy and righteous and should be embraced, is crazy, because even in the spiritual world, we have evil spirits and unclean spirits, and we have corruption and evil in the spirit world, you know. But then in the physical world, when God, every day at the end of the recreation process, he'd get to the end and say, what'd he say? It is good. Wait a minute. The material and physical world, God views as good. You know, so Paul calls it a philosophy in Colossians chapter 2, and to beware of it, that it will get you, and it sure got you and I. So the question then comes, then what is Paul talking about if he's not talking about, and maybe, you know, maybe we should have added a whole nother category there. We're thinking about, you know, is he talking about when he talks about the earth, is he talking about nature or family or friends and associates and our work? And we might even just say pleasure in general, you know, our senses, you know, something smells good, something tastes good. Something feels good. There's some appreciation we have, some enjoyment of something. And if we do, poof, okay, that's evil and wrong. But wait a minute. It's God who made all those senses. And it's God who made all the things that trigger those senses. You know, the trouble's not in creation, you know. And the troubles are just our alignment with God. And it starts by the fact that we're enemies in our mind. We get that squared away. That it's just something mental, this separation we have from God. Then we can really start enjoying life. So then what is the answer in this passage? And I'll submit to you that the answer in this passage is a dispensational answer. Anytime we're trying to understand a passage, especially if it seems wrong, and when we learn about God and who he really is, that he's love, and when we learn about that we live in a administration that dispenses grace, and then we sense something contrary to those, we ask ourselves, well, okay, what's wrong with this picture? Sometimes it's translation, and in this case, it's translations, one of the problems. Sometimes a passage is translated in a way to support bondage and support error. We know that. Hell's a great example. It supports the traditional teaching. It holds people in bondage, and that's the case here. This word affection, set your affections on things above. So there's a translation problem. Beyond translation, then there's just a reading problem. We're not reading the context, so that there is an interpretation problem. We don't know the point that's being made. And that's also the problem here. So, because if you have a text without a context, you have a pretext. That is, there's a con going on. Somebody's up to something. Now, it may not be the person directly involved. You and I bought the con, and we thought it was saying that, but it just got passed down to us. You know, so we're not saying everybody who misunderstands us that they're up to a con, but somebody has been, and we know our adversary is. You know, So then the question is, all right, first of all, how about translation? So here it says in King James, where you set your affection on things above, not on the things on the earth. Well, let's read the Concordant, for example, which makes an attempt to be consistent with Greek and English words. And here's what it says. It doesn't say set your affection. It says be disposed. Be disposed to what is above, not to that on the earth. Be disposed. Now that word there, disposed. Let's see. I wrote down the definition. Fair's Greek says harmonious. Be harmonious. Another word that comes from the root of disposed is disposition. So a disposition is our is who we are and how we think of things and our attitude and our spirit. And Paul's saying, being disposed to the things that are above, be harmonious with them. And so, what a different view than set your affection there. Interesting, Merriam-Webster says that this dis that dispose means come to terms with. And here's what you need to, let's step back a minute before we even consider a little bit more about the words. Let's just step back a minute and say, what is the context of Colossians 3, 1 and 2? Well, first of all, the large context is that it's one of the two epistles of the secret administration. We need to know that before we read either epistle to understand what's being said. Paul's introducing brand new material to the believer in Ephesians and Colossians, and he's setting aside all that belonged to Israel. So what we have before the writing of Ephesians and Colossians, we have the Jew, the Hebrew, the nation Israel is set aside temporarily. They are lo am I, they're not my people. They are in abeyance as a nation and as the representatives of God. We have the middle wall partition, the barrier wall between Jew and Gentile removed. And everything that belonged to Israel is now set aside. And now Paul shifts because Israel's hope, Israel's calling was earthly and it was terrestrial and had to do with the earth. And when you think about all the things related to Israel, they all had to do with the earth. They had a nation, they had religious nationalism. The only divinely ordained religion in the Bible, or in history for that matter, is Judaism. And the root of religion is bondage, and the bondage of Israel was the law. And so what do you have? You have a religious nation, you have a holy city, Jerusalem, you have a priesthood, you have a temple, you have altars, you have holy items and furniture and utensils in the temple. You have baptism, you have circumcision, you have all the covenants, and they're all physical. They all relate to the land and so forth. You have Sabbath and new moons and the law, animal sacrifice, and of course it goes on and on, but it's all physical. But now with Paul's great new message, he takes us from the terrestrial to the celestial, and not just in the celestials, but far above them at the very brim of creation, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. And he said, now I'm going to tell you some stuff about that. And that's where our completeness is. That's where our absolute freedom is. That's where we predate sin and corruption in the world. It's where our freedom is. It's glorious. And Paul said, you need to be disposed toward that. That needs to be your disposition. You need to be harmonious with that, was the definition. Merriam-Webster for disposed. You need to come to terms with this dispositional change. Webster says adjusted to. You need to be adjusted to this. Cambridge says it at your command, at your command. And that idea is be an expert. If there's anything we should be an expert in is our celestial calling and how that we've been blessed with all spiritual blessings in heavenly places. And it'll change everything about life. You know, what our what those who are listening to our video today don't know is we recorded this. Well, we did this yesterday. But we didn't manage to get it recorded. It didn't record. But you know what? Knowing these things change everything, you know. And when you called and told me, oh man, we didn't get it recorded. And then I laughed. You know, 15, 20 years ago and things like that happened, I wouldn't have laughed, you know. But I have to laugh because I know Father's behind it. You know, this is something Father pulled on us. It's the laugh of faith, you know. Why? Because I'm disposed to spiritual things. I'm disposed to the things that are above and where Christ sits. So I know who's in charge. I know what's going on, you know. Now, does that mean I don't love my wife? Oh, no. In fact, I know how to love her more now. Or does it mean I don't love my children or that I don't enjoy God's wonderful creation and all the pleasures it has? No, I enjoy more now. It comes from Dad. You know, so when we realize what this passage is talking about, it's a dispensational passage. The celestials, not the terrestrials, has nothing to do about loving stuff and having affection for stuff. It's about adjusting and being harmonious with what God's doing today. Man, it changes the whole meaning of the passage. Now, not only the broad, the big context being dispensational, but the immediate context, interestingly enough, the immediate context is asceticism. Paul is condemning this idea that we are to abstain from pleasure and enjoyment. He attacks that idea. And where does he attack it? The verse before these two. You know, when man added chapter and verse divisions in the Bible, they did us a great service because we can reference where something is. And you and I can get together and get on the same page and look at something together. But it's also a disservice if we don't realize that's its only reason that man added that. And that in Hebrew and Greek, there are no chapters and there are no verses. And the book of Colossians is a letter. Paul wrote a letter to the Colossians. Paul wrote a letter to the Ephesians. And it doesn't have chapters and verses. It's just a continual flow of a letter. And Steve, if I wrote you a letter the size of Colossians, not very big. But when you think about it being a letter, it's a little bit. If I wrote you this many words and sent it to you, you'd say, oh, I got a long letter from Clyde, you know, but if you were to take a sentence or two out of that letter, you might be able to say it taught anything you want or that I was saying. You know what Clyde said? Clyde said, but if you take it out of the context of the letter. So interestingly, in Colossians 1:1-2, Paul's not starting a new thought. Just cause a new chapter started. So it's the verse before. And the verse before says, speaking of, well, in fact, the verse just before it, Colossians 2:32, has the word asceticism in it. But I'm going to back up a couple verses so that we understand why he used the word asceticism. So he says in verse 20, if then you died together with Christ from the elements of the world. Why, as though living in the world, are you subject to decrees or commandments? And then he gives you examples. You should not be touching. You should not be tasting. you should, nor yet coming in contact with. Wow. What is that? Well, it's asceticism, and he'll use the word, which things are all for corruption from use, in accord with the directions and the teachings of men. It's man-made teachings. All that stuff you and I grew up with that we're supposed to avoid and we can't have, you know. And earlier, I just realized, earlier I forgot the opposite side of asceticism. One side we see it in the Amish. The other side we see it in Catholicism, where they practice asceticism. And they too think that the physical world's evil. And how do they handle that? Well, they handle it by creating nunneries, okay, and monasteries, where the holiest of their members live confined away from people, much like the Amish. But they go a little step further. And instead of just avoiding, they have vows of poverty, because wealth is evil. They have vows of celibacy, because sex is evil. We all know that, because it's physical and it can be fun. And so that's wrong, and so forth. And they even go so far as to have flogging, where they beat the most holy of them will beat themselves and torture themselves. You know, all asceticism. You know, and then so keep going. Then it says, so these are just the teachings of men, which are having indeed an expression of wisdom. It seems really smart. You and I thought so growing up too. So, oh, well, maybe we started seeing something was wrong. But to the religious world, it seems like these people are holy, pious, wonderful people. Okay, so it has a show in a willful ritual and humility and asceticism, not of any value toward the surfeiting of the flesh, not of any value. All those do's and don'ts we grow up with are of no value, and they have no place in the secret administration. They have no place. So Paul is attacking asceticism when he begins to write the next two verses that Christianity turns around and supports asceticism. Are we surprised? I would say no, we're not surprised. You know, Steve, I really appreciate that that this passage of scripture began to set in your mind and begin to bother you in light of what we've been learning, because then we get to dig in. And what I've been working on for about a week now, I've been working on, we're going to have an article in the Bible Student's Notebook that goes into much more detail than I'm sharing today about this glorious passage. But it's a passage, it's not a passage of bondage. It's not a passage of limitation. It's a passage of freedom. It's a passion of expansion, of enjoyment of life. If anybody should be enjoying life, anybody, it should be those who are called in the secret administration.
All right. So what I hear you saying contrast of freedom and religion.
Yep.
And things below are not sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Things below is religion.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And we've been taught that the things below was all the stuff you were talking about. Yes. You know, going to the movies. Yep. You know, growing up, going to McDonald's was questionable, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
Well, first of all, they have a happy meal there. We can't be having any happiness there.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Well, thanks a lot. And just so our listeners know, we're working on one of these type of presentations about prayer. Prayer is another topic that's just been totally messed up by religion.
Yes.
And our family has been going through some health issues for several people. And of course, you know, there's everybody's praying for you and they're trying to get a bunch of people praying. And so I can't wait to talk about that too. So
I look forward to it.
Yeah. Thanks for watching.